Where were we?
We started Eretz Yisrael, and we saw what Eretz Yisrael isn't. Then we saw what Eretz Yisrael is. Then we saw the proper way of seeing what Eretz Yisrael is. I'm going to mute you until 8:30, and then we'll ask the question. So we found out what Eretz Yisrael isn't, what it is, and then we found out the incorrect way of explaining to diaspora Jewry what is the meaning of diaspora Jewry, and then we saw the correct way of explaining to diaspora Jewry what it is to be a Jew outside of Israel. And then in the next chapter, in chapter two, we saw that an analysis, how can you come to such an idea of seeing Eretz Yisrael as something just extraneous? It's not something that you inherently need. And he said that it comes by being estranged from the wellspring of Torah, from the sources, from the Kabbalistic insights, and that the more you're estranged from Kabbalistic insights, the more you're going to be estranged from Eretz Yisrael. So let's finish the chapter that we began yesterday, and I'm gonna share my screen. And yesterday we saw that being estranged from Kabbalah is going to make Israel something extraneous. And then he said this very interesting sentence, Yesod Tzipiyata Yeshua, the basis for yearning for salvation is yearning for Eretz Yisrael. And that if you teach everybody that we have now reached the Messianic era with diaspora Judaism in Germany, then you're not really going to yearn for salvation because German Jewry is the salvation. And he says that that in itself is the testimony for how off-center this methodology of bolstering the exile community is. And now he's saying, Lo shalelim anachnu kol min tziur va'avanam yusar al yashrut v'rigshei de'ah v'yirat shamayim. And he says that any approach to help bolster diaspora Jewry that is predicated on Yashrut, just being honest, on integrity and honesty, Rigshei De'ah, of a feeling and a knowledge of God, Yirat Shamayim, fear of heaven. Be'ezet Zurashi, no matter what the explanation is, like for instance, you could say that you're supposed to be a very good Jew in the diaspora, like as a Shaliach, and that you just need people there because there are Jews there, and that if you're not there, the other Jews are just going to fall by the wayside. So that's an explanation to bolster Judaism, which is predicated on integrity, honesty, a full feeling of God, and Yirat Shamayim. So what is he against if he's for any explanation? Rak et oto atzad sheshita kazot tachpotz lishlol et arazim et hashpatam hagdolah al ruach ha'umah. The only thing that Rav Kook is against is antagonism towards Kabbalistic thought. And there is such a thing. Ki zeu ason shanu chayvim lelchom ito. Be'etzah uv'tfunah, be'kedushah. He said that this is something that we have to battle. We have to fight a war against the thought that Kabbalistic understandings are not a part of Eretz Yisrael. We're supposed to understand how they are, and they're a part of our Torah. Be'etzah uv'tfunah. We have to do it with counsel, with wisdom, holiness, and with valor. Now, what is Rav Kook saying here? He's saying like this, that he's not against any explanation that you want to give to help bolster the Jews of Germany. And that if you want to tell them that it is good to be in the diaspora and that they should be good Jews in the diaspora for any which reason, that's good and that's fine. And that if you have your own explanation, whatever it is, if it's based on Yirat Shamayim, on integrity and honesty, that's great. Just do that. That's great. So what is he against? He's only against the aspect of this thought which negates Kabbalistic thought. And I came in contact with that myself in a few of my classes. And I was asked, well, where does it say that? And I said, well, it says it in the Zohar. And they said, oh, well, you know, the Zohar is not serious. And then it's just done away with. And they said, well, this kind of a thought that the Zohar is not serious. You know, also, my book was, I published a book, Teiku, and it's a fun book. It's pretending that Eliyahu HaNavi came and answered all of the Teikus in the Shas, and their answers, and there's discussion about the different answers. And I have, I don't know, maybe 10 different Kabbalists who gave letters of approbation for the book, saying that, you know, it's a good book, it's worth learning. And then I saw a string of discussion on one of the yeshivisha sites, and one of the people there said, "Kimdumani she'in bar da'at echad she'natan haskama." If I remember correctly, there wasn't one intelligent person who gave a haskoma to the book. Now, there are like 10 very serious Kabbalists that gave haskomas to the book, including Rav Dov Kook and the Yanuka and Rav Titar, Rav Yisrael, Avichai. I mean, very serious Kabbalists gave haskoma to the book. And Rav Bing, like just all of the serious Kabbalists, maybe. And someone who doesn't recognize this as a part of Judaism says, well, there's just nobody gave a haskama. It's just, you know, Kabbalists. Who cares about Kabbalists? And Rav Kook is saying that this antagonism towards Kabbalah and the idea that Kabbalah is not part and parcel of our Jewish heritage, that is the battle that we have to fight. And it goes hand in hand with the battle of Eretz Yisrael and thinking mistakenly that Eretz Yisrael is not a major part of Judaism. It goes together with thinking that Kabbalah is not a major part of Judaism. And I mentioned it before, Rav Kook used to quote the Chatam Sofer. And the Chatam Sofer said that it sounds good in Hebrew, or it's probably translated from Yiddish. Kol mishe benigle kofer benistar. Tzarich lifdok im lo benistar hu kofer benigle. He said, anybody who openly comes out against Kabbalah, you have to, it's called nistar, the hidden secrets. You have to check if in a hidden fashion, he's not coming out against the open part of the Torah, and that the two go hand in hand. And this is part of our heritage, and it has to be embraced in order to really understand the full power of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. So with this, we finish the second chapter. And now, in the third chapter, Rav Kook is going to go on to a very interesting understanding of the power and impact of Eretz Yisrael. He says that the community in Eretz Yisrael is the Yeshua itself. It is the salvation. And here, Rav Kook is going to point out a difference that is actually observed in Eretz Yisrael. And let's take a look at this. And it's a very interesting difference. Orot Eretz Yisrael, Perek Gimel, Yetzirah atzmit Yisraelit. B'machshava v'tokef ha'chaim v'amifal, eifshar liYisrael, ela be'eretz Yisrael. That's a very important point. And he's saying that Israel is exclusive for Jewish culture, for Jewish expression, for original thought. Yetzirah atzmit Yisraelit. The original Jewish composition, b'machshava, thinking, u'v'tokef ha'chaim v'amifal, being a startup nation. And that's one of the questions that the book asks. Well, what is the secret? The secret is when the Jewish people come back to Eretz Yisrael, we've got contact and we have the source of inspiration, and that the speciality of the Jewish people comes to its expression as we come back to Eretz Yisrael. Lumatze. Now, Rav Kook also says the inverse of this. Leumatze, kol ha'nasam Yisrael be'eretz Yisrael, mitbatelet ha'tzura ha'klalit shebo legabei ha'tzura ha'atzmit ha'miyuchadash le'Yisrael, v'zeu osher gadol le'Yisrael. I'm sorry, it's not the inverse. He says a stipulation, or a little bit of an explanation of it. He says, anything that you do in Israel, mitbatelet ha'tzura klalit, when Rav Kook here is talking about ha'tzura klalit, he's talking about the general mankind aspect, what the Jewish people share with the rest of the world. This aspect is not emphasized as much as the unique aspect of the Jewish people. Mitbatelet ha'tzura ha'klalit shebo legabei ha'tzura ha'atzmit ha'miyuchada shel Yisrael. The unique Jewish aspect takes the forefront. V'zeu osher gadol Yisrael b'la'ola. Now, that's already a very important concept, and he's saying that this is a very fortunate turn of events for the Jewish people and for mankind, when the Jewish people are able to source the wellspring of their own creativity. What does that mean? He's saying that the Jewish people, when we are outside of Eretz Yisrael, we can't be true to our own creative tendencies. Once we come back to Eretz Yisrael, then all of a sudden, boom, we've got a startup nation. And it's a startup nation, not only in high tech, it's a startup nation in everything. For instance, it's a startup nation when we create our own Torah, our own philosophy, our own writings. We're once again returning to our endemic culture. And again, it's a process that's taking a long time. For instance, when we first started, we had the main philosophers were the philosophers of secular Zionism that didn't have so much original thought. They simply wanted to take the concepts that were at that time in the world, whether it was communism or socialism, even capitalism, and import it into Zionism to kind of formulate some kind of philosophy. But now, as we're 100 years down the road, we can see that we're getting more and more original thought, and that you can see in as far as the inventions that we're making in all ways, whether it's in medicine, the breakthroughs, also to our sorrow, we also have major breakthroughs in weapons that we just need to exist in all kinds of forms of life. We have breakthroughs. I know that a few years ago during the corona, the whole world looked at Israel and said, well, let's see what Israel does. And whatever Israel does, we'll do. And we were the first to do this and that. And then all of the other nations of the world, I remember hearing the international news, and they were all saying, well, Israel did this and Israel did that, so I guess that's the right thing to do. And that's part of our original thought of how to deal with life. Now, Rav Kook is going to go into a little deeper understanding than just being a startup when it comes to medicine, weaponry, and high tech. Let's go on and see a little more. Hachataim. And he's saying that the sins that cause exile, these are the same sins that muddy our originality, our source of inspiration. This source begins to flow with a defiled kind of existence. Let me explain what's happening here. First of all, today we can see that I'll mention something that I personally see the fact that we have to run when we hear missiles as a form of exile, and that it instead of exiling the Jewish people from Eretz Yisrael, he keeps us in Eretz Yisrael, but he just exiles us from our living room to our bomb shelter, or from here to there. And also, it's happening to different parts of the nation in different times. But it does seem like it is a kind of decree of exile, a very nice kind of light exile. It's not being ousted from Israel. And if we ask ourselves, well, okay, well, what are we doing wrong? And we know that there are three averot. There is idol worship, and I don't really think there's a lot of idol worship going on today. I mean, it's really hard to even understand why anybody would want to worship idols, and it doesn't seem that popular. And then you get into murder, and I don't. I mean, there is a murder here and there, but it doesn't really seem that that's endemic. I mean, if you compare us to other cultures in the world, I think we're pretty okay, and we're a rather relatively safe society. I don't know if it's murder. And then you come to Arayot. Now, I don't know if we're that kosher when it comes to Arayot, and we probably should be more kosher, so we can put a maybe there. And the last one, which is the fourth, which is parallel to all three, which is Lashon Hara. And that is just not saying the correct things. Rav Kook had a wonderful insight and explained that God planted the Chofetz Chaim in the generation before the establishment of the State of Israel, together with Ben Yehuda, so that Ben Yehuda would revive the physical language, and the Chofetz Chaim would revive the halachic aspects of speaking, so that the two of them together would revive the Hebrew language, so the Jewish people who came back to Eretz Yisrael would be able to speak Hebrew in a kosher way. And the essence of society is not speaking Lashon Hara. And again, when you have media, mass media, that's predicated on an ideology of Lashon Hara, and it is the right of the media, and it's the right of the people to speak Lashon Hara, and it's the right of the people to know Lashon Hara, and that you have an entire society which is predicated on Lashon Hara. That's bad. Like, if you compare it to the other three, I think that even Arayot, it's nothing like that. And then you say, okay. And actually, if that's true, and we're deserving of galut, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually very merciful to us, that we only have to run from our bedroom or living room to the miklat, to the shelter, and back again a couple times. And let's hope that somewhere on these runs we'll come to realize that we're not really supposed to be speaking Lashon Hara, and we're supposed to be involved in thinking good things about our neighbors And our Jewish solidarity is supposed to permeate all aspects of society, even the mass media. And that's supposed to be our Reshut HaRabim. That's supposed to be our national aspect. So Rav Kook is saying that these sins, idol worship, murder, adultery, and the worst one, Lashon Hara, this is what causes us to defile our source of originality and the inspiration. The inspiration source is muddied. Let's take a look, and he has an entire process here at Mishkan Hashem Timei. וכשהקור המצמי מיוחד נשחט, מתעלה המקור יהודי יסודית לאותו החלק העליון התמציתי שיש לישראל בסגולת האדם, וזה נשאב דווקא בגלות, והארץ מתרחבת ומשתמד בקורבנה מכפר עליה. He explains that when this source of unique Jewish inspiration dries up, or you've muddied it to such an extent that it's defiled, it no longer allows us to have a unique Jewish presence, well, that's it. Then it kind of ascends upwards, and we are just equal to all of the nations of the world, and we receive our inspiration through the inspiration of all of the nations of the world. Rav Tzvi Yehuda, in the back of Orot, mentions the Magid Meisharim here, that quotes that there are 70 different angels who are in charge of the different 70 different angels that are in charge of the different nations. And that, for instance, when you go to America, so Jewish people receive their inspiration through the minister of the United States, through the celestial minister of the United States, and his thought processes and his inspiration and his writing is American. And he's not writing a totally unique Jewish concept, but it's an American cultured Torah, and that the Torah is tainted by the minister of the United States. And the same is true when he's in France, in England, or Australia, or anywhere in the world. And that if he is in that part of the world, then he's affected in his inspiration. Runs through the inspiration that is given to the dominion of the nations in the world. It's very interesting. Now, he's saying that as the Jewish people are exiled, the land is without anybody, and nobody is speaking Lashon Hara in Eretz Yisrael. So when that happens, the land starts to replenish itself, and the inner spring that was defiled starts to become purified. It takes a long time. It might take 2,000 years to purify that. Hamayan slowly, it this wellspring becomes more and more clear. That while this is happening, we are receiving our inspiration through the inspiration of all of the nations of the world. Now, this continues until the wellspring that we left in Eretz Israel, and it was abandoned, once again is able to have a good, pure source. Once that happens, then the Jewish people once again are able to have a Jewish identity. We're able to have a national identity. We're able to return to Israel. All of a sudden, we have a Zionist movement and we want to return to Zion. We want to live in Israel. We're able to write Jewish Israeli things. Exile is just disgusting and despised, and who wants to live outside of Israel? And then he says that we are able to receive once again our personal wellspring of inspiration. This is when the Mashiach appears. Rachel Imenu is crying for the return of her children. What does that mean, that Rachel Imenu is crying for the return of her children? It means that the Jewish people are once again drinking from their own wellspring. We suddenly want our own unique Jewish identity. Now here, he has a kind of retort to Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch. Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch seemed to have a two-stage process. And Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch seemed to believe that God first brought us to Israel. Once we had a culture, we were able to formulate the Torah. Once we had the Torah, we could take the Tanakh into exile with us and then inspire the nations of the world by being exiled to the different nations of the world. Now, Rav Kook says that there are three stages. First, we are in Eretz Yisrael. We go to exile not as a preference, but as a punishment, because we weren't pure enough to be in Eretz Yisrael. We were ousted from Eretz Yisrael. But in the end of days, when we return to Eretz Yisrael, we will return with a general mankind Weltanschauung. We will have not only our narrow national perspective, but we will have an international perspective that we've gained by being exiled amongst all of the nations. So here, Rabbi Kook does adopt an inkling of Reb Shimshon Rafal Hirsch's concepts and saying, yes, there really is something that we're talking about. There really is something and a value, an added value in being outside of Eretz Yisrael. But this added value receives its expression not outside of Eretz Yisrael. Once we return to Eretz Yisrael, and once again, we develop our own specific culture, this is where it comes to play. Now, I want to mention that when Rav Kook is talking about Yetzirah Atzmit Yisraeli, he's not only talking about startup companies and about designing things. The crux of this is prophecy, and that this is the land of prophecy, and the greatest, greatest, greatest inspiration that a Jew can have in Eretz Yisrael is prophecy. And that when a person is in Eretz Yisrael, he's able to have unique Jewish inspiration. And this is the unique Jewish inspiration of prophecy. And this is what Rav Kook is referring to, that when we are in Eretz Yisrael, we are able to receive prophecy. And as we're ousted to exile, we stop receiving prophecy. And it says in Megillat Eicha, Gam Nevi'a lo matzu chazon, that as a result of the destruction of the temple and the exile of the Jewish people from Eretz Yisrael, the prophets stopped having prophecy. And we are promised that as we return to Eretz Yisrael and we return to our stature of yore, we will also be able to return to our prophetic talents, and we'll be able to have Ruach HaKodesh again, and we'll be able to have Nevuah again. And once again, our imagination will be able to be healthy and clear. He's going to explain more about it in the next paragraphs. But I think we'll stop at this point, and I'll open up for any questions. Yes. Shalom. You all seem so stunned. Yes. It looks like you almost have a question. Okay. Well, if we are without questions, so I will summarize. What Rav Kook is saying here is that there is actually a value in the fact that we are in exile, but this value comes to play when we return from the exile to Eretz Yisrael, and that this is where we have our capabilities of specific, unique Jewish inspiration. And let's hope that as a result of our return to Eretz Yisrael, we will be able to return to our complete stature, and we will be able to also purify ourselves from all of the sins that cast us out into exile in the past. And Mirtz Hashem, we should all be worthy of the Geula Shlema that seems to be knocking very hard at our door. Yes.
I want to ask something.
Yes.
Rav Kook said something about Aliyat HaYesod. Aliyat, Tchunat HaYesodit, LaMakor, HaTamtziti. Can you explain what exactly is the mechanism according to the Kabbalistic Sefirot that happens in the Shiur Koma there?
No. I mean, I can just explain what Rav Kook is saying, that what happens is that we have a specific root, a specific pipe, a specific direct one-on-one with God when the Jewish people are in Eretz Yisrael, and that as we sin, this unique Jewish inspiration just is given, it goes up, and it's divided into 70 different parts, and it goes and it's spread out all over the world. And then when the Jewish people are somewhere in the world, they simply draw the Jewish inspiration through the prism of wherever they are living through that minister. And as a result of that, it's not pure Jewish inspiration. As we return to Eretz Yisrael, as the initial spring is purified, so it beacons to us and it says, Jews, it's time to come back to Eretz Yisrael. And then the Zionist movement starts bringing people back in a very wide fashion, and everybody doesn't want to be in Israel, want to be outside of Israel. I said, no, let's go to Israel. And it's a result of this spring returning to be uniquely Jewish. Beyond that, I don't have like a hands-on like sphera by sphera analysis of what happens. Yes, no.
I have a question. So the schema is Eretz Israel prophecy, Galut, no prophecy, Bayit Sheni, not so clear where that fits in there. But when Rav Kook talks about the return of Nevuah, is there a classification, to whatever extent, of different kinds of Nevuah, like a Bayit Shlishi, you know, being maybe hopefully on the cusp of Bayit Shlishi or drawing from Bayit Shlishi Toda'a? Does he describe anywhere that that's a different type of Nevuah, even maybe his own Nevuah, right, than the Nevuah from the Bayit Rishon? You know, or it's, because Nevuah was saying Ruach HaKodesh, Nevuah in a general sense. But I'm wondering if he gets specific with, you know, coming back from the exile with the various influences from being amongst the Umot HaOlam, you know, and then, you know, whatever, I think you get my...
Yeah. So first of all, one of the 13 precepts of belief is that no other prophet has prophecy which is equal to the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. And according to the Rambam, it's interesting because it's brought down in the original source that the Mashiach will be equal in his prophecy to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Rambam, when he cites this source, he says that the Mashiach will be almost equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he's not willing to give him the stature that Chazal actually give him of being equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. And he also brings that as one of the tenets of Jewish belief, that the Torah that was given by Moshe, he attained the highest level that will not be attained by any other prophet, and even by Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm sorry, and even by the Mashiach, when he comes, he will not attain a higher level of prophecy than Moshe Rabbeinu. According to Chazal, without the Rambam's addition, it does seem that the Mashiach will be equal to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that once again, the prophecy will be the prophecy of Moshe Rabbeinu. But what you're saying, something greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not even mentioned regarding the Mashiach. The highest level of prophecy that we will have, according to Chazal, is the Mashiach, who will be equal to Moshe Rabbeinu, if not according to the Rambam. But
I'm not saying higher per se. I'm just saying different category of prophecy than by Rishon.
I don't know. That's interesting. Well, how do you categorize prophecies? And that you would say that this is from X and this is Y. Like, what is your barometer of prophecies?
Well, I mean, I can give a general idea of my perspective. Bayit Rishon was really more about the individual, and Bayit Sheni about the group, and Bayit Shlishi about the universal. So that would be some type of a structure from which prophecy associated with Bayit Shlishi would draw from. So you look at the sins of the Bayit Rishon, what Chazal tell us, they're all violation of individual rights. Shvichatam, meaning a person's right to life. Arios, a person's right to individual relationship with their spouse. And idol worship, Hashem's right to your individual service, worship. Right? And Bayit Sheni, Kamsa Bar Kamsa, is a group event. Right, so there's violations. So it's a group event, and then who comes to destroy Bayit Sheni is the universal power, the Romans, and Christianity becomes the universal religion after that. And you know, that's sort of Bayit Shlishi. We fell down on the job of transforming into Bayit Shlishi, and here we are, maybe at the cusp of that again, having come back from exile. So I'm just wondering if Rav Kook goes anywhere with that.
He does. He talks about Malach HaYideut, but it's not necessarily referring to prophecy, but referring to the formulation of Jewish culture. And he's saying that the basic idea is that Bayit Shlishi will be the combination of Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni together. And that everything that we gain during Bayit Rishon and everything that we gain during Bayit Sheni will be all put together. And that there are three kadoshes that are in the world. Kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. The first kadosh is B'Shmei Shmaya. The second is Al Ara, Ova Devorte. And the third is Le'olam U'Le'olmei Olmaya, which is combining the first and the second, and that these three kedushot are the three periods of Jewish culture of Bayit Rishon, Sheni, and Shlishi, where the third one is a synthesis of Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni, and that it could be that the prophecy will include that aspect, and it will be focused towards gearing the Jewish people to that form of culture. It could be. But again, when we're talking about prophecy, there were myriads of prophets. It says that there were more millions of prophets, kiflaim ki yotzei mitzrayim, millions of prophets, and we don't really have their prophecies. And you see that Shaul goes to Shmuel and Avi and says, maybe you know where to find my donkeys. And that was also a prophecy. And he says, well, yeah, they're found, and now they're looking for you. And you have all kinds of prophecies. And some of those millions were probably those kind of prophecies when prophecy returns to the Jewish people. Not all of them will be great Tanakhic prophecies. And the prophecy of the Mashiach will probably be that level and that direction. But we'll probably just have the return of prophecy. According to the Rambam, when a person has inspiration to create something new, that's also a level of Ruach HaKodesh. And when someone writes something new, that's also considered a level of Ruach HaKodesh. And those levels have already returned to us. With your permission, I'm going to turn the recording off now.